Welcome to the Chief AI Officer Podcast,
where AI meets leadership.
And here is your host, Sanjay Puri.
Welcome to the CAIO Podcast, where we bring together Chief AI Officers and leaders driving AI in large enterprises and government agencies. This is the platform where Chief AI Officers can learn from their peers' success and challenges, inspiring not only each other, but also aspiring Chief AI Officers who want to follow in their footsteps. Our goal also is to democratize AI talent. All AI talent should not just work in tech companies. Here we highlight the exciting work in AI happening outside of tech companies, work that is revolutionizing government agencies and industries like healthcare, manufacturing, and financial services. Today, I'm thrilled to introduce our guest, Vinay Singh. Vinay holds not one, but two key roles at the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development as both the Chief AI Officer and Chief Financial Officer. With over two decades of experience spanning the public and private sectors, Vinay has been at the forefront of leading AI innovation in government agencies, ensuring safe, secure, and trustworthy AI applications. His work at HUD addresses both financial strategy and AI-powered transformation. Let's dive into his fascinating journey and hear what he's learned along the way. Welcome, Vinay, to the Chief AI Officers Podcast.
Thank you so much, Sanjay. Great to be here.
Awesome. Vinay, we have a global audience. Obviously, a lot of them in the U.S., but the rest of the world. These are AI experts, aficionados, entrepreneurs, policymakers. Can you just walk them briefly through your journey in terms of becoming the Chief AI Officer at HUD?
Sure. Happy to. So I joined HUD in July 22 as the Chief Financial Officer and quickly realized my background is in obviously finance and a bit of technology, and realized that with the financial transformation and how government procures technology, along with legacy HUD challenges with technology being very underfunded in technology, I needed to move quicker. And so AI started to kind of come into play in the public light about 2-3 years ago. And so I immediately went to the Chief Information Officer, Beth Niblock, at the time, and said, hey, I'm going to do this for CFO, not for HUD. And this is about 6-7 months before the executive order. And I said, I just want to get your blessing because it's tech, right? And so it's going to run through you at some point. And she, you know, we did some discussion sessions and she's like, this is great. Go ahead. So then fast forward, the executive order came out. The secretary, deputy secretary asked Beth, because as is typical, most CIOs or CDOs have become the AI officer. And Beth said, you know, talk to Vinay because I think he stood up a team. And she was right. Kate Darling, my assistant CFO of systems, put a working group together and it swelled to over 30 people looking at AI in finance. And so we had developed, or Kate and the team had developed, you know, some charters, some kind of thinking around it, some educational pieces. And so when I took the role, we had a little bit of a head start, but that's how I came to be. But my background has been mostly finance and then technology. I was always a volunteer being an accounting when the ERP process started, right? All that, everyone was switching over to Oracle and SAP, and I raised my hand, not being a formally trained technologist, but not being afraid of it. And so the funny part of that is every job I would have after I volunteered in this tech roles, about a year later, I would be out of a role, right? Because I was basically putting myself out. But the learning I got from there really just keeps me interested in tech. And I know that, you know, underlying any transformation is technology.
Well, I mean, one of the things that we try to do in this podcast is have learning lessons. You're also inspiring lessons, as I said, there are folks that are interested in becoming Chief AI Officers or leadership. A couple of important things you mentioned in there. One is you were ahead of time in reaching out for this. You also raised your hand and volunteered. You could have just, you know, done your part in being a CFO and doing a great job, but you went beyond what you were doing and also volunteered and were thinking ahead. So I think that's a great message, because somebody could be sitting saying, hey man, I don't have the biggest machine learning or biggest data science background. I'm not, you know, I didn't get an MS from Stanford or Carnegie, etc. I don't think I can be doing that. But what you're saying is it's not just what you know, but also the desire to know. Would you say that's true for our listeners?
Absolutely. I mean, passion is something that, you know, has to be brought to the table first, right? So if you're aspiring for anything, if you don't have passion, then I'm not sure what you're doing in the role, in any role, right? So yeah, I think just from that aspect of volunteering, being engaged, and knowing, you know, coming in, whether you're a leader or an aspiring leader, you know, raising your hand and volunteering, you know, be careful what you ask for. I mean, the conversations I had when we first discussed me taking the role, you know, folks were like, are you sure you want to take this role? And I said, why not? Because, you know, I'm very passionate about public service. And I know that whatever I can bring, even though I have a phenomenal rock star team doing great things, things like this are make or break in my, you know, my opinion. I am an AI optimist, and but I do preach and understand guardrails and risks to the mission. But if we don't do it now, if I had this 1 year, 1.5 year timeline to do it, you know, this could just be another piece of put your head in the sand. This is just a whatever, an executive order. It's an election year. But that's not something I saw, because there are those fundamental challenges with technology and government. And for public service, and especially being a CFO and the financial steward, you know, good use of taxpayer funds, we need to be smarter. And so I saw that there are potential benefits. There's a lot of the perils as well, but we can do both at the same time.
Awesome. We're going to talk about the benefits and the perils too, but sure. a great lesson, a great message for our listeners. So let's talk a little bit about HUD. Can you tell our listeners, how is AI currently being utilized to improve HUD's operations and services, Vinay?
So AI, I mean, we have, so if you go to hud.gov/AI, our compliance plan that we just released is there, plus the four public use cases. And those, you know, stem from document summarization, kind of, you know, looking at chatbots to query over 1,000+ consolidated plans that we typically receive, and for years have not had the resources, the human resources to really look at those plans. So this is just a way of saying, hey, this is something that local state governments give us, good data. Again, the foundation of all this is data. And so that's one of them. And then we have three from Ginny May, who's very obviously closely connected to the banking industry. And so they showcased, and so you'll see out there, machine learning algorithms to do credit narrative reports, counter credit narrative reports, et cetera. But they were doing this prior to the executive order. So we caught them up and went through and did a whole right safety impact analysis and made them public. But the reason I want to call this out for a second is, you know, they're tied with the industry of banking. And banking industry has been in this for longer than just a year or 2 years. And so any agency that is in the space would have already been involved. So, you know, HUD is a civil service agency. So we are not going to have as many data scientists or the funding, such as like a DHS, folks that are in security or defense agencies, but we do have them in banking. And so that's those are the use cases currently in use, in play. But there are a lot of ideas that, you know, we've built out kind of a triage funnel of assessing different ideas coming in and look to do proofs of concept even before they become a use case. They seem to cluster, just like most federal government agencies, around customer service, citizen service, so things like chatbots. But then there's a lot of the low-hanging fruit, things that I would call like document summarization. I mean, all government agencies have swell, you know, materials out there. And so whether it's internally us assessing, so, you know, talk to the inspector general and said, you know, we may be able to, plus my team, financial management, you know, there's a lot of audits that come out. Can we just get a little bit smarter in going backwards and saying we've done this before or not? And so looking at those aspects in terms of where we're going to be, and I know you may ask this later, but I'll just touch on it here is, you know, right now we have for this last year have been in listen and learning mode. And so the real large language models, the real LLM of AI will come in a year or 2 years out, right? We have to really understand this. We have to get our data right. And we need to put all the appropriate guardrails, because HUD's mission, you know, of creating strong, sustainable communities and affordable housing really serves the underserved. And so we can't make a mistake with whatever we do. So when you talk about policy, that is something that's very rigorous that we've, you know, continue to build right governance and risk mitigation around.
No, that's very, very impressive. Vinay, one of the questions from your peers was that, you know, they, like HUD, have in some cases hundreds and thousands of potential use cases. Now, you talked about proof of concepts, et cetera. How does one, and this is for your peers to learn, how do you decide which ones to pursue, which ones not to pursue? Because there is no shortage of proof.
There's no shortage of ideas. So we align it. I keep talking about it in what's the outcome we want, or the problem, you know, backing into what is the problem we're trying to solve for, and starting with obviously the critical pieces that HUD plays a role in, with housing or homelessness. What are those aspects that can really move the needle in terms of impacting our mission? And we'll work backwards from there. Some of those, like I said, are going to be complex and could take a little bit more time to put instill the right anti-bias or discrimination elements. We will look at those, and those might cost more. But then there's some low-hanging fruit of things like, I talked to my counterpart over at the Department of Transportation, CFO Victoria Wassmer, around things like fraud, waste, and abuse, whether it's improper payments, Payment Integrity Act, right? So those are things that AI definitely can advance and move the needle. And what that does, if we're able to do that, because it's multiple players, not just HUD, right? It might be a PHA, it might be a local state government. And so if we get smart around that, all government agencies have this element of potential fraud. This is where you rebuild public trust. So I look at it as a circle. If we take care of this potentially using AI, public trust gains, because we're like, look, we're not wasting as much as you're saying, or we don't have this much abuse. Then all of a sudden, members of Congress who authorize our funding will start to give us more to say, hey, you've tackled a big problem. Right. So anything in leadership, when I'm at this role, it's like you gotta win some in the short term that make real impact to get to the ultimate impacts we want.
Yeah. Well, I think that makes a lot of sense. So what you're saying is, you know, pick the ones which has the biggest impact to your different constituents, whether it's the citizens, right, to the members of Congress who are going to appropriate funds. Vinay, I made a mistake. I should have asked you to talk to explain to our non-US audience of what does HUD do, just at a high level, because we have a lot of people from Europe and Asia who tune in. We live in no HUD very well, but they might not. Just give them a very quick summary of what is HUD.
Sure. Department of US Housing Urban Development really has five kind of, we look at it as five critical strategic goals. Around serving the underserved, whether it's helping states and local governments tackle homelessness, and so appropriating funds there for states. One critical piece, almost 60%+ of our budget, goes to Section 8 and voucher housing programs, so funding public housing agencies for those in need. So less than, and there are thresholds here, 30% or 50% of median income will qualify to receive housing support. And then beyond that, we have a community planning and development program or function that really helps rebuild communities. So when we talk about housing being a pillar of any city or community, I mean, that's the critical piece of getting people housed, because it starts with that. Mm-hmm. Then you can talk about education, healthcare, et cetera. And so we do things, you know, through that group. And inside of CPD, as we call it, there's also an energy and efficiency function where we look at doing things in smart technologies or resilient technologies in buildings of homes, but we don't go out there and do it alone. And so, you know, and then we have a great function called FHEO, which is Fair Housing Equal Opportunity. So this group works critically to make sure that folks aren't being, you know, not being put in housing because they're being discriminated against. That is something, even when we talk about AI, which was essentially when the executive order came out, they talked about values to impact. And the reason that the US government put it out is, you know, who do you want to be inscribing or defining the values that go into potential models, right? So that those are critical aspects of making sure there's no bias and discrimination in housing. And we have other programs like Ginnie Mae and FHA. So Ginnie Mae, essentially with FHA colleagues, ensures critical liquidity in the housing market. So they go around the world. Ginnie Mae is much more known. It's part of HUD, but they operate internationally, bringing funds in to actually deploy into the housing market so folks can actually buy a home, right? They can have government-insured homes so that even if they don't have enough down payment assistance, we help with down payment assistance and aspects like that. So those are kind of the broad strokes of HUD.
Well, it's a very important agency for people who are maybe not as familiar, giving Americans, every American, the opportunity to own a home. I think that's if I were to think of it, it doesn't matter what your income level or who you are. I think that's it's a very, very important function, which has played an important role in the, you know, especially in the middle class. Talking about innovation, Vinay, talk to a little bit your peers. How do you balance innovation for the need with the need for responsible and ethical AI use in the government? You kind of touched on it, but just, you know, you want innovation, but you also have to balance it. You want the latest and the greatest. How do you balance that?
Yeah, it's really sitting down at the table. I mean, when I started in the role, I had all these listening sessions with each of the functions I outlined, and just wanted to hear from folks. What were they scared of? What were they excited about? And you know, this EO definitely is the first time in my lifetime that I've seen an executive order or federal government say, you know, don't shy away from innovation. So it points to reducing barriers to innovation. So I use that a lot in the sense of talking about it. Like, there are folks that don't want to do anything, folks that are looking at this as maybe the next SAP, or this is just a migration to the cloud. And so part of this is AI literacy and educating folks, right? So that's the first part of defining innovation, of why we should even be thinking about this, because it touches all aspects of internal functions at HUD and all the ecosystem that HUD plays in. But then coming down to how we balance it, I mean, it is from that lens of, will whatever we use here, is there a human in the loop? Is there a critical decision, you know, that's going to be made that impacts policy or how our money can be used against our mission? So in April of this year, I think April 27th, you know, the executive order called for HUD to actually opine on the AI use in tenant screening models, the algorithms used there, and in the advertising of housing. And so that was a good way where we just, we put some language out there, worked with, I think, CFPB on one of them as well, but we essentially raised up again our Fair Housing Act and other acts and policies that we already have. So there's not a lot of new. Folks think that you have to really redefine your policies and procedures on AI. Definitely you have to touch on them, but a lot of what we already say and do, we can't violate. So the bias discrimination aspect. So those are questions that go into the triage when we have kind of an idea come in and in the funnel of, is there a potential here? And it doesn't mean that we won't. It means we need to look at it deeper, study it deeper. So it will take time for us to see where it can hit. And but leaning in, just the last point I'll say on innovation, this is where I also, you know, I've been on the kind of the panel circuit for about a year, and folks, you know, are kind of iffy about it, you know, because HUD is typically not at the forefront of technology and talking about this. But I keep telling them that the reason I do this is because we learn from everyone else, right? This whole AI for me is all in. Like, and because this is an unfunded mandate, I am also looking for to share best practices, next practices. Where are we going to get that? So I have colleagues across the federal government that really we share in the background, so that we don't need to reinvent the wheel. But in that sense, you know, we just recently completed our Office of Small Business and Disadvantage. When we helped those vendors out, we had pitch sessions done where industry could come in and, you know, like a market research paper, and say they want to showcase their wares, but put it in a frame of how it would solve a problem at HUD. And so all our information is public, being a federal government. So if you read an agency financial report and you read the top management challenges that were just released by the IG that's done every year, you know where our pain points are. So come in already with that. So me being an ex-consultant private sector, I know the value and the real critical value of public-private partnership. Never to, you know, get you know, bypass the taxpayer or try to do anything out of the ordinary. We will follow all the rules. But there is an engagement here that we can learn from everyone else.
So I, again, you made some very important points, because we have a lot of a lot of your peers in the Fortune 500 listening, but we also have a lot of entrepreneurs who have innovative products. What I think Vinay is saying is, your innovations are not only for commercial entities. Agencies like HUD are also looking, because they understand that innovation doesn't always happen internally. It happens externally too. He just did a market opportunity. So watch out. They believe a lot in public-private partnership. I think that's very, very exciting what you just said, especially to the entrepreneurs who are working on some amazing technologies. Vinay, one of the things, as you talked about innovation, talk about the aspect, you have worked in a consulting firm, the aspect of change management, is there a change management aspect to this technology? I mean, this is a transformative technology. Tell your peers and other listeners, what does that mean and how are you dealing with it?
Absolutely. I said it from day one, once I took the title and started the listening sessions back in the December of last year, I told everyone that this is a change moment, right? So my experience of being a change agent across many private sector and even my stint with the Department of Commerce has been around when something big and new comes like this, and literally introducing to many organizations, but in federal government, I think it's even harder, a new C-suite role. So you're going to have someone at a table with a different view. Folks are going to be a little apprehensive, right? And so I said, look, in change, what is the critical thing about change? My past experience as a PMP, project management professional, really, I always hearken back to forming, storming, norming, and performing, right? Those are the four phases when you do any big change. And so I formed a team, ad hoc team. I've got great partners from CIO, Ochico, and others, PDNR. And so I got that team. And then we stormed through a lot of sessions in establishing how we're going to do what. But now we're at the place where I think our position just closed for the deputy chief AI officer yesterday. We're going to hire that person in the coming weeks. We're starting to normalize. And so my whole goal 1 year ago was build a sustainable foundation that the career folks, regardless, because it's an election year in America, if folks haven't heard, that is going to transcend. It's not political, right? This is something that I want folks to be able to be comfortable, regardless of leadership, that they know what it is, know where to go. If they have an idea, if they have a concern, how do they address it? And so that foundation is starting to kind of get gelled together. And now we will move into performing. And the real performance will come also with budget, right? Government in the US works on 2-year budget cycles. We just completed our FY26 budget, which starts on October 1st, 2025. Many agencies have requested funding for AI there because this, again, was an unfunded mandate. We were told to do this, but not with any additional funds.
Well, that's very interesting. You said forming, storming, norming, and?
Performing.
So you're at forming and storming, right?
I think we're starting to get normal. Like there's still a lot of work we need to do in terms of, dot the I's and cross the T's and SOPs, et cetera. But we've done a lot that I see the next few months really just finalizing that normalization. And then once that funding really comes through and some of the other aspects, we'll start to perform. I think you'll start to see some progress there. But I think, with change, the last thing I'll say is, being, any kind of change agent, change moment is communication. And so that was another piece of me starting this, because it wasn't my first time doing something like this, in the sense of getting everyone to feel comfortable and letting them know what we're doing. And that includes folks like the Inspector General. That includes folks like GAO, because I know they're after, within a couple of weeks, the 1 year anniversary of the EO is there. And I'm sure some auditors are going to knock on our door and say, how did you implement, this executive order? So, having everyone at the table is really helpful, because that's when you can, kind of chunk through the critical aspects and really prioritize what are going to be the difficult areas and then plan the work.
Oh, that's good. I hope some of your peers are going to use the forming, storming, norming, performing formula. We'll use it again unless it's completely trademarked. Vinay, at a broader level, you deal with a lot of chief AI officers in the federal government agency. How do you see AI changing the way government federal agencies interact with citizens? Do you see that happening?
Absolutely. I mean, that's kind of the pull, right? Me being an AI optimist, because I think it's going to fundamentally and consequentially change citizen service delivery. So whether it's U.S. government or any government, state or local or federal or tribal, if we use this appropriately, and we have to abide again by privacy and make sure there's no bias and discrimination, we do this right, it will change how we deliver services. So whether it's just citizen service experience, right? How do you actually, when you go on a website to get help, I mean, it is, private sector has a one level of platinum level. Some companies are really good. Take Amazon as an example. I'm not, promoting them, but that's one example of the one clicks, et cetera. So we can get there. So things like a little bit of the customer experience. And then again, document summarization. There's so much language to read to maybe apply for XYZ, whether it's HUD or another agency. Those things should not be difficult. I know that why a lot of those documents are large is because we need to abide by a lot of different regulation. But there's a lot of layers of policy that we're trying to declutter. And I think that AI can help us declutter that. So I think it's fundamentally going to change. In addition, I don't think governments are going to continue to have any increased budgets in the next decade, two decades, right? There's always a constraint on taxpayer funds. Yeah. And so we have to get smarter with how we think about delivering that.
So as you said, you're an AI optimist. It's going to really change, not just federal, but state and tribal agencies for the better. Make it more efficient without an increase in our budget costs, because we are not going to see too many budget costs, improvements, et cetera. Talk about your agency. How do you think, you talked about one of your core missions. Do you think AI will play a role in addressing issues like homelessness and affordable housing in the future?
I mean, I think so, but that's why we're studying it, right? I think one thing I want to just lay out that I forgot to talk about is the importance of our workforce, right? And mm-hmm. and people and the humans at the center of what we do. I don't want this to come across, because it is not the case, definitely at HUD, that we are looking at AI to save us money and then there's not going to be people to do the work. I want to be very clear. When I talk about AI, I talk about it from a sports analogy of offense and defense, and really defense and offense. And what I mean by that is protecting the mission is the defensive part. What is everyone else using AI that interacts with HUD? How can they use it to potentially game us? Or, you know, if we go to the Hill for money and the folks in the House are using AI and we're not able to, where do we then jeopardize our mission by not having the right information at the right time? So we got to protect our mission. And that's why AI is important. The second piece is the amplify our mission. So it is that low hanging fruit. And so when I talk to workforce and people who do have, you know, legitimate fears and concerns, I talk to them saying, you know, they think they're going to lose the job. And I say, okay, if AI can help you, first of all, do a few things faster, the first thing I want you to do with that time savings is reinvest it in yourself. Do you have work-life balance? Can you just get back to 8 hours a day and just, you know, enjoy your life and enjoy the mission and the work? If you get more than that, it doesn't mean we're going to get rid of you, because that list of priorities is 500 pages long. And so maybe we get rid of the first five, we have time now to do something else. So it's really, if you're aligned to the mission, whatever organization you're with, you would want to do something else to advance that mission. And because it's government, it's so hard to get good people hired in government. And so why would I look to, you know, push anyone out? It's just getting people to do more value-added work to amplify that mission. So I'm sorry, I kind of went astray. Come back to your question. Remind me what you mentioned.
Well, I was, you know, we were obviously talking about talent, obviously, is a very important aspect. But, you know, we were talking generally about will AI be able to address the core mission of HUD, which is, you know, homelessness and, you know, affordable housing in the future.
Yeah, no, good question. I think that's what we're studying with our policy data and research team, which is one of our functions. You know, really that civic engagement, the community engagement, learning what folks are doing. So I study what's happening in, let's say, California is looking at AI for use in homelessness, whether it's predictive behaviors, et cetera. Other cities are doing the same thing. Affordable housing, there are many ways, whether it's compliance, you know, there's a lot of compliance aspects at a local, state, federal level. And there are many AI tools off the shelf or that could be developed to speed that process. So it will ultimately address those, but we have to study them because we are not going to just deploy them. But that's why it's important to have this engagement with where our money goes. It doesn't go directly to the citizen. It does go through this ecosystem of nonprofits and the local, state, tribal governments, industry as well. And so we need to make sure how they're using it. And so I'm talking to states like Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, who's leaned in with AI. And so they're very excited to just understand the money that we fund the state. You know, how are they potentially then deploying it out to housing agencies? And so how can we just get smarter since we're all part of this ecosystem?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You touched on talent. So let's just go down that path, because one of our missions is to democratize AI talent. But since you touched on it, there are two important aspects. One is, as you said, you're going to, you know, defense and office. You're going to protect the people that you have. That means could mean there could be reskilling and upskilling opportunities within there. And then there is also the goal of being able to attract new talent also, because there are some skills. There is no matter what you do in reskilling, because AI is moving so fast, you have to attract new talent. So people from HUD who are listening into you, talk about just briefly, what are your thoughts on reskilling? And then for people who are potentially looking at HUD as an opportunity, what does Vinay look for when he's looking to bring somebody on? Because as I said, we want people to not just look at tech companies or tech hubs for their career. If you're, you know, someone coming in with an AI degree or wherever you are, we want you to look at HUD. So tell them, what do you look for in there? So just two parts on the talent question.
Sure, sure. I mean, on skilling, look, that's been the really the mantra I've been preaching for a year. And our chief learning officer, Matisha Montgomery, and our leader in human capital, Lori Mikulski, have been great partners with others in creating an education program, right? So even with my first message that went out to all of HUD, there were links in there for training that was already in our virtual university. So getting educated, right? And trying to understand and continuing that flow. And it can be in pockets, right? So there's master, we did some kind of masterclass training for executives. We've done all hands trainings. And so critically, you know, just introducing those skills. And then there's the aspect of, you know, a lot of folks are coming in that we're hiring that are, you know, coming out recently, that AI is already part of their lives. They already know it. So they come into federal government, and some agencies may not have, you know, we may have 20-year-old technologies, and they're saying, what is this? But this, I flip that, and I flip that because it's also a great opportunity for retention. I've seen retention rates improve here at HUD, and folks that want to stay because they're saying, hey, we're actually leaning in a little bit on innovation. So you have to balance the, you know, the folks that are concerned with the folks that see it as a use and are already using it. So we'll continue that kind of just educating and getting the right people in. What I look for personally, I don't know if it was President Obama that said this years ago, but essentially, can you get something done? Right. I look for a thread in a resume that says, have I seen you be able to kind of navigate, or it'll come out in a personal conversation, because every organization, look, you'll come in with some skill sets. And again, I don't think it's fully data. Right. OPM has done a great job with, you know, really enhancing agencies' ability to hire more with flexibilities, et cetera. But they're also looking at, you know, program managers. I'm a passionate project manager. Right. Like, I think everyone in their life, whether you know it or not, is a project manager. You look at your calendar and you manage your life, and that's project management. So, you know, that's someone who knows how to balance time. But then I also look for someone who understands the essence, if, you know, even if you're new to the place, the organization, the essence of the mission, and always keeping that as the shining light. Because anything you do, you know, if you talk about it from the frame of this is how it's going to advance the mission, you will get something done. So someone who basically, you know, I've seen get things done in a complex organization, because it requires persuasive skills, negotiating, all those types of soft skills, I think are critical. Managing up. I mean, these are skills that I look for. People that, you know, are not scared to manage up. I look for people to challenge me. I'm not, you know, I'm one person. I have a team that actually should be congratulated for any successes, and I'll take the hits. But those are some core elements that I look for, because, you know, finance is great. I'm CFO and chief AI, and I know most AI officers have the CDO, CTO, CIO. I think CFO globally has become almost a number two in most organizations, because they do see holistically across, whether it's from an audit perspective and all understanding all the challenges. So having that lens is also very interesting.
So for our listeners who we want them to apply to HUD and Vinay, he's looking for programmatic skills. He was looking for a thread of achievement, not just working, but is there a thread of achievement, and mission oriented? Do you believe in this mission, and are you mission oriented? And then soft skills, negotiation, persuasion. Did that cover most of them?
Absolutely. Yep.
Wow, that's great, because we do want some of the best and brightest to come to HUD, because that's very important that we get that talent in there. We need to talk a little bit about how important is interagency collaboration in what you do. This is, again, for our listeners, your peers. Is that important in the world of AI right now?
Critically important. I touched on it when I mentioned that even though we have these AI officer council meetings convened with the White House every month, there's a lot of back channeling. I've met, I think, at least 8 or 9 chief AI officers separately, but not one-on-one. I brought my teams, right? Like I want folks to learn. I encourage those folks to bring their teams. This is all new for federal government. AI is not new. There's been other legislation or enactments out there, so it's not completely new. But in terms of the speed and the implementation of what we're doing and being an unfunded mandate, it requires that sharing, that like, hey, what did you learn from this? I tried to, you know, comply with XYZ on right safety. How did you do it? That kind of backroom thinking is very important. Even with SEC, I talked to the chief data officer over there, Austin. I mean, getting our data folks in front of them and just sharing those experiences, it is absolutely critical. It's something I've, you know, taken from the arc of my career, which is you got to converge. Like you have to build alliances. You have to build a whole ecosystem of learning and understanding and sharing. And that is how you can accelerate in organizations that have the constraints of limited funding or just, you know, unclear perhaps guidelines, is doing things a little bit together. So I'm a huge believer in that.
You made a very good point. You have to converge. So you're converging with different agencies and things of that nature. Is there any convergence externally with academic institutions or any private sector or think tanks as you are implementing AI? Because a lot of your peers at Fortune 500 companies are working with academic institutions, research institutions. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so we're exploring how to do that, whether formally, because we talk to all the civic bodies, so whether it's National Fair Housing Alliance and different folks, inking those academics, academia as well, looking at, we have a lot of agreements with like HBCUs, for example, for other things in the housing space, but we are exploring these opportunities. And for anyone that has ideas, I encourage you to, you know, come forward and bring those ideas, because we are actively starting to identify that strategy.
Wow, that's great. For our listeners who are looking for partnership opportunities, please reach out to them. We know one, obviously, perception is that AI adoption in government agencies will be slow. What advice would you have for accelerating this process, obviously, while maintaining, you know, transparency and the ethical standards and the guardrails that you talked about?
Yep. I think, first of all, having a very solid problem that you're trying to solve, an outcome. And I'll give you an example. One, I think I mentioned before in terms of the fraud, waste, abuse area, like improper payments. Mm-hmm. Taking that and then building an alliance. So I'll tell you what we're trying to do with Department of Transportation and Victoria's team in financial management is having them work together to figure out how this could potentially work. And I do that because, you know, with transportation, we're on the same committee, the T-HUD committee in Congress. And so building that alliance in front of folks that authorize the money. So getting the right people, I think we talked about this earlier in the conversation about, you know, kind of building an alliance so that folks, everyone had a seat at the table. There's some equities. People feel like they're involved because they are. That's how you can move quicker, is if you do that right the first time. And that's why my mantra has always been engage with everyone, because you don't know who you're going to need to get this to the finish line. And it's definitely true of federal governments. You know, private sector, you know, depending on your position, you can just pick up, sign a check, do this, move that. Government, there's a lot more guidelines. We will still follow all the right guidelines, but I believe in these informal networks that you can create, or alliances you create, in knowing what problem you're going to solve, knowing that it'll have an impact to those different disparate audiences, and then building that alliance. So if I come in with state X, agency Y, civic body, you know, A, and we all are the ones that would, they are all the ones that may complain, getting them on the table and presenting something together, things move a lot quicker.
So what you're saying is engage with everybody, build alliances, and, you know, build a solution together that would have much faster ability for success. Those are good suggestions. Vinay, you had a very successful run at HUD, and you continue to do so. For our audience, which is made up of aspiring chief AI officers in both the public and private sectors, what do you think are the skills that are essential for aspiring chief AI officers?
Like I said, someone who has been in a role of being able to understand that whole organization. So again, I'm biased here. I was an ex-auditor, but auditors are, you know, kind of bring that. There are different roles, whether it's chief marketing. As long as you can take a step back and understand all the parts of the organization and you can converge those to accelerate the mission, that's kind of the one piece, because AI does touch every single function, right? It just does. And so it doesn't mean you're an expert in all that, but I need to see, you know, we should see organizations that want to be successful should see someone who is not scared of that and knows how to do that. How do you bring, you know, general counsel into a meeting with public affairs, into a meeting with policy data, and get them to agree on something, right? Like those are, and again, you may not have done that all the time, but if you've demonstrate skills that you can bring people together. So I think it's that convergence piece. And then it's just the ability to be that change agent that we talked about, show experience of actually leading change initiatives. How'd you do that? Because then that demonstrates to me that you know how to communicate. Because with any major initiative, but definitely one that has all the sensitivities with it, which is AI, the promises and the perils, communicating is very, very important. Semantics are important. How you say something, how you convey something, what you do. So I think between communication, an ability to kind of see holistically across the organization and move things forward, those are the critical pieces.
Oh, that's very, very valuable information. So would you say, Vinay, a generalist more than a specific expertise is more valuable for being a chief AI officer?
Well, I think definitely just generally, yes, a generalist could be better. But again, then it depends on the organization. So you might be in a much more technical organization that has a technical product per se, right? And so that AI officer may need to actually have a lot more and be a data scientist and have those abilities, because it may be a larger team of managing data scientists. But, you know, leadership, what I've learned is, you know, skill sets and, you know, being a subject matter expert will get you so far. But if you want to move into a leadership role, you need to be able to take that step back, become more of a generalist, and, you know, delegate those specific points out a little bit to be successful.
That's very valuable information, especially for folks who want to grow up to be you and want to be in that chief AI officer role or a leadership role, bringing people together. I think one thing you emphasized several times is that ability to communicate, Vinay. You've said that many, many times. So I think that's an important message.
Absolutely.
Vinay, at the end, we have basically a lightning round of questions, just one word answer. Just try to put you not on the spot, but have you owned the spot? So you ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, let's get Vinay, the Chief AI Officer of HUD's perspective on that. Vinay, supervised or unsupervised learning?
Unsupervised.
Synthetic data or human-generated data?
Human-generated data.
Okay. Biggest AI challenge, data or talent?
Data.
AI impact, immediate or long-term, Vinay?
Long-term.
More important in AI, speed or accuracy?
Accuracy.
Okay, final one, Vinay. I think I know the answer to this. Key to success, strategy or execution?
Strategy. Because I think for the government, I know you don't want more than one word, but execution should be built in the design of the strategy.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Vinay, thank you so much. That wraps up for our audience our fascinating conversation with Vinay Singh, who's the Chief AI Officer and the Chief Financial Officer of the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. Vinay, thank you for sharing your insights.
Thank you.
Yeah, on leading AI initiatives in government and the unique challenges and opportunities it presents. Your perspective of balancing innovation with responsibility in the public sector is really invaluable. And, you know, I hope to our listeners, whether you're an enthusiast, AI enthusiast, or an aspiring AI leader, we hope this has provided you valuable insights into the world of AI leadership in the government. Remember, the future of AI isn't just in Silicon Valley. It's also in agencies working to improve the lives of citizens every day, like Vinay is. So Thank you, Vinay, for being on this podcast. Really enjoyed it.
Great being here. Thank you, Sanjay.